You are listening to Gila Membres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Welcome to New Earth Kids, a radio show featuring kids who care about their community and the environment in which they live. On this monthly show, kids of all ages talk about the challenges facing planet Earth, and we tell you how we are creating and implementing solutions. New Earth Kids is part of the Kindred Continuum series and airs on the third Monday of the month at 10 a.m. and will be replayed on the air the following Sunday at 4 p.m.
Welcome to New Earth Kids. I'm your host, Nan Franzblau. Today we'll be talking with Mike Fugali and the eco-monitors from Aldo Leopold High School about what they do. Mike, welcome to New Earth Kids.
Hi, Nan.
Hi.
Thanks for having us. It's really exciting to be able to share, you know, what this group of young people have been doing out there in our region. And I guess we should start just by introducing them. They're usually, you know, the official thing is Youth Conservation Corps, Aldo Leopold Charter School Eco Monitoring Crew. It's a mouthful, but these guys just call themselves Eco Punks. So. Eco-punk is the term that we like. So let's start with Josh over here. Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm a junior at Aldo Leopold, and I've been in eco-monitoring since after freshman year.
Hi, my name is Beth, and I'm a senior, and this is my second semester of eco.
Hi, my name is Maya. I've been on the Eco Monitoring Crew since the summer before freshman year, and I'm a junior at Aldo Leopold High School.
Hi, I'm Morgan. I'm a senior, and I've been doing Eco Monitors since I was in ninth grade.
Hi, I'm Kevin. I've been doing Eco Monitors since the second semester of my sophomore year. I'm a junior.
Hi, my name is Bodie. I'm a junior at Aldo, and this is my first semester doing Eco Monitoring.
Hi, my name is Ethan, and I have been doing eco-monitoring since the summer before my ninth grade year.
Hi, my name is Kojun. I'm a sophomore, and this is my first semester of eco-monitoring.
All right, and we're missing our crew leader today, Aiden, who is sick. These guys are great. It's been a great semester. This is their last Friday this semester. That's how the YCC crews work at Aldo. We go out one time a week on Friday. That's what we mean by thinking outside the box.
So what is an eco-monitor?
I guess if I were to answer the question, what is an eco-monitor? Eco-monitors do many different things, such as sometimes we do stuff like bird banding, which is going out, setting up nets into the wild and actually catching birds so that way we can gather data such as wingspan, height, as well as species and gender of those birds. And also some days are going out into San Vicente and doing some actual restoration work, such as expanding the river so that way it can have more room to flow in order to reduce vertical erosion.
Cool. I remember at the beginning of the semester, you know, even before we talked about eco-monitoring, just the idea of monitoring was pretty interesting. And you guys all told me about some of the things that you yourself monitor. I think that would be really cool for people to hear. You know, what is it that kids and young adults, students like yourselves, what are you monitoring in your lives now? Anybody want to tackle that? Ethan, you got something on your mind?
I'm not monitoring too much in my life, but I am monitoring other things, like, I guess, birds in my yard. I do that quite a bit during the summer, not so much now during winter times. But I also monitor my cycling routines and just kind of what days I go out, how long I go for, and where I go, how many miles, that kind of thing. That's mainly what I monitor, but sometimes I also monitor, like, what I eat.
On the way here, I was listening to you and Kojin talking, and it was great because you were talking about computer components, and you were talking in a language that I couldn't even begin to understand. So that must be something. Kojin, do you monitor computer components? Is that part of what you do?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So you're pretty into it.
Yeah, me and Kojin are both pretty into computer stuff, especially the new graphics cards.
Anybody else here monitor that kind of stuff? How about anybody else? Does anybody else want to share what they do monitor?
I guess I could. I monitor video game stuff for my Switch, just seeing what new games are coming out, as well as monitoring the competitive formats for Pokemon, because I have a lot of fun doing that.
Uh-huh.
However, some of the other things which I monitor is I monitor how much I walk just by playing Pokemon Go, so that way I can track how far, which I'm walking generally. I monitor what I'm eating, like Ethan said earlier. I monitor my weight because I've been trying to lose weight recently.
Cool.
And yeah.
Yeah, neat.
I would say a big thing that I monitor is, like, education-wise, my grades and my schoolwork, trying to stay up to date on that. And, of course, every Friday we're monitoring eco-monitors. So
right.
We get to learn about that, too, and that's a weekly thing. And that's a big part of my life and what I'm interested in.
So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about eco-monitoring. You know, I think I've mentioned that sort of fundamentally, to me, we're talking about our relationship with the natural world, right? And so that's something that a lot of young people, especially in really urban environments, it's hard anymore with 8 billion people on the planet for everybody to be able to develop a relationship with the natural world. I'm just curious, do you guys have any thoughts on that? Has your relationship with nature changed since you became an eco-monitor, or did you join eco-monitor because of your relationship with nature?
I have always been into the outdoors and stuff like that. I grew up out on 10 acres of property, and so I've always been kind of just into the outdoors, and I've heard from a lot of people that eco-monitoring has been really fun, and so I was like, why not give it a shot? And yeah, it's been really fun. I've learned a lot from Mike.
Kevin?
Yeah, whenever it comes to it, whenever I joined eco-monitoring, I wanted to learn more about the wild as well as do less physical work coming off of Trail Screw joining eco-monitoring. And since joining eco-monitoring, I've just been more aware of the ecological processes going on around, as well as being more aware on what's actually going on in the wild. And as somebody who kind of is on an endless search for learning more and more, it has been very fun getting to learn a lot of things, especially from our leader, Mike, and learn bird species, plant names, what's going on below the soil. It's a whole lot of fun.
Great. Anybody else?
I'm originally from Texas, and then I moved out to Membris about like 4 years ago. So just being able to be out there like in the mountains and like bushwhack a lot and go on trails and stuff has just like developed an interest in, you know, all those like systems, you know, like right outside my door, you know, so being on this crew helps me actually be able to understand.
Right. We've talked a lot about, you know, eco-monitoring as almost being like a physician or in the medical field. You know, we're talking about the health of natural systems. And you always, hear me talk about sort of the two parts of being a doctor. Does anybody remember what that is? What do doctors do when you go to the doctor?
They find symptoms and they diagnose.
Right. So they diagnose a problem. And so that's what we're doing out there, right, with all that data collection. And then, though,
we're finding a fix for it.
Right. Right. So it's really two sides of the coin. So what kind of things do we do with our data, like the bird banding data or the species lists that we get? How do we move that into the real world?
We put it through the Forest Service, right? We give that some of that data to either local groups or kind of people in the Forest Service that we know, so that they can, you know, take that data and do what they need to do with it.
Right. And we can share it online in formats like eBird. You know, we can share water quality data with partners like GRIP here locally, Gila Resources Information Project. And, you know, learning about, you know, what's that famous phrase, you guys? I'd rather hear it coming from you than from me, but do you remember what Aldo Leopold said about viewing the world through an ecological lens. Anybody know what I'm talking about in Sand Con, the Almanac? Quote about what happens to a person when they start looking at the world ecologically. You know, the price of an ecological education is often living in a world of wounds. That was a very amazing insight that Elder Leopold had. So this is always hard for me as an eco-monitoring supervisor because, as we all know, you know, there's problems both locally and globally that need to be addressed. And so for a lot of young people, I think they're being really educated about some of these more global issues for the first time. So I'm just curious, is that true? And has that affected you guys being probably more aware about things like climate change and species lost?
Yeah, I think it has. Before I joined the crew, I definitely knew like about climate change, and it's definitely at Aldo, we definitely learn a lot about it. But I think being on this crew has definitely helped me like focus more onto that instead of it just kind of being a topic lost upon by the teachers and just like referred to. This has actually kind of helped me understand exactly what's going on and what different things we can do to help with it, even if they are really small.
It kind of brings like a more like cynical or like critical kind of like mental attitude, honestly, when you know about all those problems, because it's like any new legislation or anything that like a new politician says, or, you know, somebody in like your own personal circle, it's just kind of like you just immediately start kind of like debunking it sometimes when it's related to climate change or, you know.
Right.
I guess another aspect of that, however, is especially since joining Eco Monitoring, I've at least found in my personal life, whenever the topic of climate change has popped up, it feels almost empowering knowing that I know some of the science on what's been going on and what you can actually do in order to help stop climate change and exactly what can be done. And having that ability to know what's going on can feel insanely empowering because you're able to take a look at these adults in which have spent most of your life telling you what's going on, and you're able to tell them what's going on. It feels really nice to be able to do that.
And it's kind of bringing like the global perspective of climate issues and the changes that are going on into the smaller perspective of our community. So we get to experience that firsthand, and we get to learn about it with examples in the National Forest and out on the Iron Bridge Preserve and through collecting data about what we're doing. And we get to see the issues that are being talked about on a global scale and a personal level in our community.
I want to remind our listeners, this is KURU 89.1 FM, and you're listening to New Earth Kids with your host, Nan Franzblau. And today I'm joined by Mike Fugali and the Eco Monitoring crew from Aldo Leopold High School. Thanks so much for being here, you guys. And
thanks, Dan.
Yeah, let's continue with our conversation.
Okay. So, you know, we just were talking about sort of the heavy issues of learning about some of the environmental challenges that we all face, but let's turn now to, you know, the positive things about what you guys have been doing. And one of them, you know, one of them is a project that both Nan and I are deeply involved with, is the making of the Johnson Sioux compost up at the Gila Woodnet using the two waste streams. You guys want to tell me what those two waste streams are?
Yeah, so one of them that we are using is we are collecting the leftover food from kids' lunches at Jose Barrios and Harrison Smith, and we are collecting that and bringing it out to Gila Woodnet, who is hosting the project, and we are grinding it up and mixing it with other plant matter like wood chips and leaves to create a compost material to put in barrels.
Cool. And so the one waste stream, yes, is the food waste. The other waste stream is what we call the woody biomass, right? And so where does woody biomass come from in this area? And why is it important, you know, that we find ways to get that biomass out of a waste stream and into a resource stream that we can use. You guys remember where that wood is coming from primarily?
Isn't it from the U.S. Forest Service's wood thinning, I believe is the exact term for it? And the reason why it's important that we do this wood thinning is, of course, as many of you have heard of, we've had the two biggest fires in this in New Mexico in this year. So it is very clear that fire danger is something which is very relevant to this current area, or to this area. And so therefore, what happens whenever the U.S. Forest Service goes out and does this thing is it takes out a whole bunch of the material that a fire could use in order to start a crown fire, which, unfortunately, once you have a crown fire, it's very hard to
get. Burns real hot.
Burns real hot, very hard to get in control of. And therefore, making sure that we do this preventative measures is very important.
Right.
And then, as well, once we get this material and grind it down, we're able to use it. And kind of going off of what Bodhi was saying earlier, we're taking these two waste streams, we're putting it in barrels, and we're making sure that it gets into a thermophilic phase, which is 140 degrees for 2 days. And then, of course, letting it sit for a year so that way fungi can build up inside these barrels. So that way we're able to take that fungi and return it to soils as almost a...
We call it an inoculant.
A
fungal inoculant. And so it brings dead soils back to life. We're really excited about that. Does anybody remember the third ingredient in the recipe? Yeah, Bodhi.
Biochar, which is basically, like, we use pecan shells from the orchard down by Las Cruces, and we burn them in a very low oxygen setting so that they burn but only the carbon is left.
Pyrolyzation.
Yeah, instead of it just all turning into ash and going up into the atmosphere, it sequesters all this carbon that we can add to the compost, which helps hold all the nutrients and helps sequester the carbon.
So, you know, it takes a lot of work to fill one of those bioreactors, as you know, because you guys did it. But who's really doing the bulk of the work? Who's inside those bioreactors?
A whole lot of microorganisms as well as fungi.
Yeah, bacteria and fungi, right. And they're slowly breaking that down and turning it into the kind of compost that we want. Does anybody remember that new vocabulary word that I shared with you guys? What is that name of an organism that is, its existence depends on its synergy with other organisms like our gut flora or other kinds of microbial communities?
Isn't that a microbiont?
That's so close.
Holobiont.
And so, you know, all living things pretty much that are multicellular organisms on this planet are now holobionts. So we were laughing the other day because we're also defined as a eusocial species. So we wanted a new bumper sticker that said, you know, eusocial holobionts unite or something like that. Anyway, so what else are we doing out there? What else are we doing to try to affect change in our community through the Eco-Monitoring Program?
Something else that we are doing is helping restore the San Vicente Creek down by the old Chinese Gardens out by Ridge Road. And we are helping remove the unnative trees from the area and planting native trees to help restore that riparian habitat that is currently damaged. Riparian areas are really resilient if all the ecological stressors are removed, so we are helping by removing those stressors to help restore this area.
Cool. So anybody name some of those non-native trees, the ones that we're actually trying to, reduce or get rid of down there and along San Vicente Creek?
We're working to remove Tree of Heaven. And Chinese elm.
Yep.
And since they're really overcrowding, and they also take up a lot of water that not, native trees need in order to grow and survive. And they're also super invasive, and their roots go really, really deep, and they spread really far. And so they suck up a lot of the water that the native species need in order to flourish, even though they do create really good habitat for birds and stuff. It's kind of like the balancing of planting new trees and taking out little bits of non-native trees. And so it's not a drastic change in...
it can't happen overnight.
No.
It takes a while to kind of foster that transition. How about the native trees? Anybody want to take a stab? Do you guys remember the names of any of the trees that we planted this semester?
One of them that we are planting is sycamore, New Mexico hackberry. I can't remember some of the others that we were planting.
Some type of willow was also another type of tree. For the willows, we would actually take willow sticks and we would plant it basically in the middle of San Vicente A creeps. We would place it in the bank so that way they could soak up water from both sides and grow up to be magnificent native trees in the area. And speaking of it being in the bank, one of the things that we ended up doing was we went out there and actually dug out a channel for the water to go, so that way the water could perform some more horizontal erosion. Unfortunately, after the railroad came in and moved the stream over, it had been doing a whole bunch of vertical erosion. And of course, vertical erosion is definitely something which we're trying to avoid, because that makes the stream go faster. So therefore, this area loses a lot of its groundwater, which is, of course, where your water comes from.
Right.
And so therefore, it's much better to have horizontal erosion and slowing down the water, so that way we can keep some of it in our soil, so that way we can use it in order to drink.
That's great. Yeah. We actually, in a channelized section of the river there, we increased the width of the floodplain with a backwater irrigation channel that sub-irrigated those willow poles. So they planted coyote willows and blue stem willows and Gooding's willows. And we can't wait to see. This is all in partnership with Gila Resources Information Project's River Stewardship Funded San Vicente Creek Restoration Grant. And so there's a big ongoing effort that these guys are part of in restoring San Vicente Creek.
I have a question. Once you plant these riparian trees and plants, do they need to be maintained? Do you have to go back and keep caring for them? Or can you just kind of plant them and they'll just take care of themselves?
Since they are native plants, they don't need a ton of tending because they are already used to this area. But definitely getting them started in the ground, since they're not used to that soil and that environment, they need a bit of help getting started, like some watering and stuff, just to help them get used to that soil and get their roots to grow. And then once they are used to that area, they don't really need much, since they are native plants that are grown here from seeds and stuff that were collected in this area.
It's really fun. We essentially have a young forest starting down there, and so we've had several semesters of YCC students working on it now. So some of the trees are about 2 to 3 years old now, are starting to poke their heads up above all the weeds. And these guys put in some really nice new ones this year. What else have we been working on? Do you guys want to describe a little bit about our trip up to the tar spill and what your thoughts were about that? That was such a real interesting thing for our community. What did we do with that particular outing?
So we went up and met with Nick Prince up there, and he's been really involved with the restoration of this of the tar spill up in the Gila. And so he walked us through where it happened and the negative impacts of this, since there was water flowing through the creek when this happened. So it the tar got in the water and it flowed very far down the stream. And so he walked us through the restoration that is happening there, and he took us down and showed us some of the rocks, because a lot of the rocks were coated in this tar. And so he showed us the stuff that they're doing to help mitigate that and restore it to as close as possible to how it used to be.
We also kind of talked about what it's going to look like in the next few years. So, like Bodhi was talking about, with the tar covering the rocks, the hope is that over the years with a lot of flow through the creek, that eventually the tar on the rocks will erode. And we also talked about the difference between, a lot of people were saying it's an oil spill when it's a tar spill, which is a little bit less worse than an oil spill because it doesn't have the same chemical impacts in the water, and it makes it a little more possible for it to be cleaned up and regulated. And so that was kind of some good news to hear. And it was also really cool to see how much work has been done to clean it up. We got to see further down the stream, there was not as much damage, and the water in the stream didn't look too dirty or unhealthy, and so that was hopeful to see.
Great. Anybody else?
I guess another aspect of it was see the tar. I like to call it murder taffy just because of how much it murders the environment. However, I guess another interesting aspect was seeing how pine needles and leaves were really picking up the tar, because the tar would just seem to attach to them. And then, of course, with the efforts of Nick as well as some other people who were focused on cleaning up the tar spill, they set up little grates, and those pine needles, which had the murder taffy or tar on it, would go into those nets. That way they could be collected. And it seemed as if nature was working with the human-made systems in order to help get the tar out of there. And it was very nice to see, because it's one of the few times in which it seems like humanity is actually working with nature and not trying to fight against it, like with so many other things in which we do in our daily lives.
Yeah. Right, cool.
That's encouraging. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. We're also on the web at gmcr.org. And this is New Earth Kids, part of the Kindred Continuum series. And joining us today for New Earth Kids are Mike Fugali and
hi,
hi, Mike, and the group of eco monitors from Aldo Leopold High School.
Okay, let's see. I have a couple other questions I was thinking about. You know, you guys hear me rant about environmental issues all the time, and I just want to check some more vocabulary. So what do you think I mean when I say welcome to the Anthropocene?
Welcome to the new Earth period. Welcome to our new climate.
Well,
welcome to what we have created.
Yeah, Kevin?
I guess another aspect of that would be in the past, before, I think it was 1990, you said? Before 1990, it was more so nature was keeping itself in check. However, though, unfortunately, with all of our fossil fuel burning, all the wood clearing, with all the stuff in which humanity has done, we have now entered a new scene. And unfortunately, the scene is humanity is the main one in charge of the environment, unfortunately. So now we as humans are having to pick up the slack. And unfortunately, we're the ones who force ourselves into this position. So therefore, we do not know as well how to actually take care of the environment with the lives in which we live. And unfortunately, it is a situation in which humanity has to be the main one in charge. We can't just say, oh, we're going to do this, and then Mother Nature will take care of it. That isn't how it works anymore. Unfortunately, humanity has forced itself into a position in which we are in control of what happens to the world. And if humanity doesn't do stuff soon enough, unfortunately, we might be in another great extinction because of our own actions.
Right. Anybody else have thoughts about the Anthropocene? I know that, the oldest person here is probably 18. Is there any 18-year-olds here, or are you all under 18?
Aiden
was sick. He's sick today. So you know, the world's geologists haven't officially declared the Anthropocene yet as a new geological epoch, but they're pretty close. And what that is going to mean is that you guys essentially are born in a different geological epoch than Nan and I were. We're from different geological epochs. Do you think it's weird to be born in a different geological epoch?
Makes me feel old.
Yeah, it makes me feel old too. So, you know, the story that we always, that conservation biologists sort of have settled on is this idea that we took off in the mid-1950s on the Great Acceleration. And right around, like Kevin said, right around mid-1990s is when we sort of crossed that boundary. So these guys are in a brave new world. Does anybody remember, for instance, how much the Earth has warmed already from its pre-industrial levels?
Warmed 1.5 degrees, right?
1.2 degrees. And sort of the big news that the global Earth scientists have passed on recently is that it's going to be really, really hard to keep global temperatures now. The timeline is so short before that 1.5 degree, you know, centigrade goal that the Paris Accords had set. So, you know, what that means is that these guys are going to be living in a world where we're moving into really the high-risk category for irreversible planetary change. And that must also, you know, weigh on your minds. Is it weird to think that the Earth isn't the same Earth that it's been for the last 10,000 years?
Yeah. It definitely is kind of scary thinking, like, it's going to be really interesting seeing what is to come, you know, because there's going to be a lot of change, I think, in our lifetimes. And you can't really predict a lot of what is going to happen. So we just kind of have to wait and see what happens. And it's going to be, there's like not a ton that we can do to really get around this and help repair this without everybody's help. And so.
Right. I was just thinking of that. You know, that famous phrase, it takes a village. You know, we're in a new era now, it seems to me, where the phrase is, it takes every village. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Go, Kevin, did you have something to say?
Yeah. I guess, especially as, well, one of the younger generations, it seems as if, as you said, it takes every village. And unfortunately, it seems like, especially in today's modern society, about 80% of the village is trying to fight against the 20% who's trying to save the village from itself. And unfortunately, as somebody in Gen Z, we're dealing with so much new stuff, such as all of the new school protocols of which we have to follow, all of the new societal standards, the internet, and we're still developing. And it's so hard, I guess, for our generation to have to comprehend all of this stuff, and yet we're still being told by our parents, you guys have it easy, you guys have it easy, you guys have it easy, but yet it's like, we have it the most hard because we have to save the world from you guys. And it feels, it puts a lot of pressure on us. However, especially with some of the stuff which this generation has already pushed for, I believe that there is a chance in which we'll be able to, I don't know if we're going to be able to stop it from getting past 2 degrees, but I think we could at least stop it from getting above 2.5 degrees mm-hmm. Celsius above.
That's great. Yeah, it's definitely a form of injustice, and we've talked a lot about that. You know, there's many groups that are actually suing governments for the breach of constitutional rights to a safe atmosphere and a livable biosphere. And so, you know, We were talking the other day about, do you remember what I said about the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois, what they have about their constitution?
Oh.
The Iroquois constitution, the great law of peace.
I remember what they ended up doing, or at least whenever it comes to thinking about major actions, is what would the seventh generation down the line want us to do?
Right.
And it's definitely an idea which humanity has to consider, which I hope humanity will start to consider a lot more, is what would the seventh generation from now want us to do? Because unfortunately, with the things in which we've done, there might not even be a seventh generation down the line at this point, and with all the stuff which humanity has done, and we've neglected them, and unfortunately, it almost kind of feels philosophical that we're call Gen Z, because it seems as if we'll be one of the last generations to actually get to live a full life if Earth continues to go the way it is.
Right. And you remember, you know, and so I've tried to, hey, you guys, I've tried to really point out that you're living in a unique moment. Why is this moment so unique? You guys have thoughts about that, Maya?
Yeah, so I think it's unique because we don't really have any idea what is going to happen past this point. I mean, there are definitely going to be negative impacts, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's all going to be terrible. And it's kind of like evolving and adapting to the issue we've created for ourselves and finding ways that we can fix it or make it positive or find in our lives personally how we can make a difference and how we can feel included in like this new unknown for like humans in general. And I think it's definitely sad, but it's also definitely interesting because we don't know what's going to happen. And there's going to be a lot of changes, and it's also going to be really interesting to see how species react to the changes that are being made and if things are going to evolve and shift and change. And that's kind of what we're doing in Eco Monitors, is we're kind of seeing how species are shifting and changing with the new climate things that are happening. And we're getting to track those things with data and with going out and experiencing it. And so I think it's interesting.
Great. Yeah, Josh?
I think it's also worth mentioning that in the past, nature was kind of like self-sustaining and if it would rebound. But now, humans are the major drivers of change. And so it's just us now and what we do in the future.
It's kind of weird, right? Because there's that iconic thing, a common among almost every indigenous culture ever, that the earth is our mother, right? And the reason we say that really is because it's so all loving and all, you know, caring, and you can kind of get away with anything. But we just recently got to that point where you just can't get away with anything anymore. And so in a sense, you know, that relationship with nature is more like a partnership now, almost like a marriage. And you could even say that the future is our child. So, you know, it's I hate to give up that idea of Mother Earth because it's so powerful for so many people, but it is a changed relationship. And these guys are faced with that. Yeah, Kevin?
I guess as well, whatever comes to this whole new scene, it almost seems as if we're entering a new unknown. However, though, if we take a look at history, whatever humanity has entered new unknowns, whether it be, well, the continent of North America getting discovered, it seems as if humanity adapts really well to it, even if it does bring a little bit of despair and a little bit of pain in the process, we end up coming out on top. And I'm hoping that this is one of the situations in which history repeats itself. We do eventually triumph over this, even though, as Maya was mentioning earlier, it will not be without sacrifice.
Right. My dad always told me that change really happened like a 2x4 to the forehead. You know, nobody really wants to change until they really have to. And then it's remarkable what our species has been capable of in that regard, I think, huh?
Well, we're creatures of habit, and that's how, you know, what has enabled us to evolve is just...
Right. So in that sense, you know, here's another concept that I really have tried to hammer home this semester. Does anybody want to tackle the idea of a keystone species and what that means in terms of us? Yeah, Ethan?
I mean, a keystone species, that is what kind of holds together the entirety of an ecosystem. Without that one species, you know, entire ecosystem would kind of fall apart and just become just another ecosystem without really much diversity. But once you add in that keystone species, it adds a lot more diversity to the ecosystem, which, you know, means that there can be more different plant species, more animal species that can come in because that keystone species, whatever it may be, is either trimming down, you know, invasive species that could be brought in by say, humans, like, we would bring it in, and then maybe that keystone species, whatever it may be again, be able to kind of get rid of it and push it away. And just the fact that some keystone species are going away, like...
Oh, what's our famous one on the wolves. On the river?
What
beaver,
are
we? Beaver. We're always trying to, you know, do think like a beaver, right? Because through their actions, they improve the opportunities for other plants and animals and make the ecosystem more complex. So, what would be the opposite then of a keystone species?
Invasive species.
An invasive species, right. A species that, when it enters an ecosystem, and oftentimes they're non-native species, reduces the opportunities for other plants and animals that had co-evolved in that area. So, so in terms of us, what do you think we are? Where do we fall on that spectrum?
We're definitely an invasive species because, I mean, we've covered the entirety of the Earth. There's very few areas on this planet that are not, you know, inhabited by human beings. And we also bring with us our pets, cats, dogs, you know, whatever it may be. Cats are invasive to almost every single ecosystem that they go to. And we can see that just by looking at the amount of birds and life that they kill. And it shows us that we are, we bring a lot of invasive species to these areas that are not well adapted to change and other species that are maybe more dominant in, you know, reproduction and...
Yeah, well, let me just ask this. So you just said that, you know, you thought that we were an invasive species, but remember that quote that I keep telling you guys? Oh, you guys, lots of hands up here. So I'm just going to hold off on that and just start around here. Bethany, what are you thinking?
Yeah, we're definitely an invasive species that brings invasive species, you know, all over the place. But I would say we're also, in a way, like, keystone because we need to, like, stick around to kind of, like, clean up the mess, you know. If we just, like, immediately, like, left to another planet or something and just, like, disappeared off the face of the Earth, I mean, it would still be kind of, like, catastrophic because we need to, like, sequester that carbon manually. So.
Yeah, we've kind of become, like, a gateway species almost.
I would say, talking about, like, this new era we're entering into, in the past, it's kind of been the norm to be an invasive species, whether that's conscious or subconscious. And moving into this new era of time and this new shift in our paradigms as a species, it's kind of an opportunity to be keystone species and to look at the perspective of needing to support what's going on around us and the systems we have damaged and learning the ways that we can do that as individuals.
Yeah, when Ethan kind of mentioned that we were an invasive species, it kind of... it made me think of, like, the Chinese elms and the Tree of Heavens, how they just kind of are introduced into an area and they just, like, take over. They take the water from the species, from the other animals. They kill off the other animals because there's no more space for them to live and stuff. And it kind of just made me think of how we kind of done that. Like, we go conquer an area, we cut down all the trees, we build stuff where animals used to live, we just kind of take up all the space and get rid of the habitat where stuff can live. And then Beth was talking about how we are a keystone species, and it we're kind of both, I think, because
that's sort of what I was getting at. And that quote that I was going to share was from my hometown hero, Roger Torrey Peterson, who said, "We alone among creatures have it within our power to ravage the world or make it a garden." So isn't that the unique thing that we have about being human, is that we get to make a choice? Who else, what other species gets to make a choice? That's one of the defining things, I think, about being human.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and this is New Earth Kids.
Yeah, Kevin.
Okay, so I guess my look audit is we're almost a forced keystone species. We entered the area, we killed off the main keystone species, and now we're being forced to replace the keystone species and do what they used to do. So an example, and I forget exactly who was that gave this quote, but I've remembered a quote that was, "The deer fears the wolf fears the mountain fears the deer." And whatever we came into, the wild and we killed off the wolf, we took their place. Because if you think about whenever Americans were coming into the Southwest, the goal then was kill off all the wolves so that way there would be perfect hunting ground so that we could hunt as many deer as possible. Whenever we did that, the deer were able to multiply like crazy and were able to eat a whole bunch of the trees and shrubs basically to nothing. And unfortunately, if we do not take over for the wolf, the entire mountainside is going to die because the deer are going to eat everything up. Once there's no food, the deer themselves are going to start dying off. And then we kill the entire ecosystem. So therefore, we as humans have essentially replaced the wolf. And now we're having to kill all the deer. So that way, the mountain doesn't get screwed up. And we're now in that position. And we have forced this upon ourselves.
Maya?
It's also kind of like we get to see the issues, like erosion is a really big one. We've gone out to AT and Cinda's ranch. You know what it's called?
Pitchfork Ranch.
Yes. And we did One Rock Dams out there. And
yeah.
We've kind of helped because there's these huge scores in the mountainsides as a result of erosion, not just from deer, but also cattle are a really big issue. And that's something we talk a lot about in Eco Monitors is the feral cow issue in the Gila Wilderness and the Gila National Forest. And we've had meetings with the National Forest supervisor in order to discuss issues like that. And so it's not just the keystone species that are like trying to balance out those like checks and balances. It's also the introduction of other species like cows that are affecting stuff.
Right. And so a lot of the things that you're talking about, check dams and planting trees and the other stuff that we do, you know, I'm always telling you it's the age of, starts with an R.
Restoration.
It's the age of restoration, right? So I can't remember who just said this, but it was very insightful. I think it was Kevin. You know, the fact that we've moved from the era where we could have just been a background species if we wanted to, but now we've moved into the area where we have to be a keystone species. We don't really have a choice anymore. And so, you know, it's the age of restoration. And these guys, that's what they're learning. They're learning how to restore landscapes and really make a difference as we move ahead. Does anybody want to share anything else about our eco-monitoring experience this semester? How many of you guys, let's see. I know that Kojin, you're going to do an internship probably next semester. Probably, I bet it would be technology-oriented. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I'm looking at working with Nick Prince, actually, in his called the binary circuits internship.
Oh, cool. That's what my son Hawk did. Worked with him too, did the same thing many years ago. The rest of you, I think, said that you wanted to return as eco monitors. Is that right? Except for you, Maya, tell us what you're going to be doing.
I'm heading to a semester school in the Bahamas in January, and I'm going to be studying marine biology for 3.5 months in the Bahamas. And it's kind of like a semester away, so I get all my credits for school. And I still have the same classes, but it's very marine-focused. And so I get my diver certification, and I get to learn a lot of the science behind marine eco. And so I'm super excited for that.
Cool. That's awesome. Everybody else will be back. Is that right?
I believe so.
Yes.
And anything? Anybody doing anything particularly exciting for the holidays? Anybody going hiking or going on a trip?
Skiing.
Skiing. Where are you going?
Angel Fire.
Wow.
That sounds fun.
I love Angel Fire. I've always wanted to go ride my bike over there.
Oh, downhill in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've wanted to go downhill. Wow, that sounds super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do over the holidays, but I always find stuff to do, so I'll probably end up finding myself doing something. This semester has been really fun. I've learned a lot, and one of the things that I've been doing is I've been on a lot of the different crews with YCC, and I was on Mural Crew last year, and
that's cool.
One of the seniors who was the crew leader of that crew said that it was really fun, and to be crew leader, you basically have to be on the crew your whole high school career, and one of the things that they said that they regretted the most was not diversifying their experience with the different crews, because to become crew leader, they were just on Mural Crew that their whole experience, and so they didn't really get to experience the other crews. And so I'm really trying to diversify my experience and learn as much as I can. Like, I've been on Trail Crew one of the summers, and then last year I did Mural Crew, and then this year I was on Eco Monitoring, and I've really enjoyed it this semester. I've learned a lot, and Mike always has something to do, and yeah, it's been really fun, and I'm really enjoying my experience with YCC so far.
Good. Today we're gonna, after we're done with you, Dan, we're just gonna go up and watch some videos at the house and have a few more Jolly Ranchers. I feel so guilty. I'm riddled with guilt, but sometimes I need to power the crew with hard candies.
We need a balance.
Yep.
I have a question for you guys. How do you see yourselves taking what you've learned and your experiences as eco-monitors and using those in the future, like after Aldo Leopold High School? What do you see yourselves doing with this experience?
I'm not 100% sure what I want to do when I graduate high school, but this experience that I've gotten from YCC, I think will definitely just help me. Like, I will have that knowledge, so when people are like talking about stuff, if they're trying to understand something that they don't 100% understand, and I maybe understand it more, I can help them learn about something related to the environment or something. And so, yeah, I think it's just good knowledge that is kind of rare these days. Not a lot of schools are teaching this stuff about what's happening with the environment and stuff, even though it's such a big thing. And so being able to help people learn and understand what's going on is, I think, a big important thing.
Let's start with Beth.
So I'm graduating this spring, and it's really exciting, but after I go to college for either being an ethologist, which is like directly connected, but also a chemical engineer, I don't know, haven't chosen. But after that, I want to like travel, just like the country or maybe the world in a van, and just like make art. But then after that, I want my career to be, you know, outside.
That's awesome. You've got big plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Maya?
I think simply just having the awareness of the place we live in and the community we're involved in is a super important skill moving forward. And we have one of the biggest and the first established wilderness right out our back door, and we get to go out and experience that. And having the awareness of the species and the issues and everything that's going on around us is really, really important. It doesn't necessarily have to be grown into a career in the future, but being able to come back here and explain to our parents or our family or our kids or our friends what's going on and the differences we can see is a super important quality to have, and it's really important knowledge that we're gaining through learning with Mike and learning from each other and being out and having the experience.
Great. Kevin, did I see a hand over there?
Yep. Especially whenever it comes to knowing about what's going on with climate change, it seems as if we know more than, I'd say, 95% of the world's population in terms of what's actually going on with climate change. And have that knowledge, we can use that knowledge in order to educate others, because unfortunately, whatever climate science or climate change in general is talked about, especially on the media, it is, the actual science of it is not addressed, especially as some people who actually know what's going on, we are able to teach others and spread actual true information and be able to fight the misinformation that, of course, you see most modern media spread, because, well, unfortunately, it seems as if for the media, it makes them a lot more money wherever they tell these false lies, and be able to spread the actual truth and help stop the false lies and make sure that we're actually focusing on what's going on and right. What we need to do in order to save the environment, as well as to save humanity as a whole. So,
of course, knowledge, everybody says, is power, but knowledge is also responsibility, right? I think that's kind of the point.
Definitely. Well, I am so grateful to you guys for taking the responsibility to help educate and inspire and just be out there on the ground doing the work. That is huge. So I want to thank you all so much, Josh and Beth, Maya, Morgan, Kevin, Bodhi, Ethan, and Kojun, and Mike Fugali. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Nan.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
This is great.
This was really fun.
Good. Thank you so much. I hope you guys will come back and report back on your good work. And I want to thank all our listeners for listening to New Earth Kids here on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico.
Thank you for listening to New Earth Kids, part of the Kindred Continuum series on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. We'd like to thank the New Earth Project for sponsoring this show and KURU General Manager Marcus Hansen for his ongoing support. May we all continue to listen, learn, and grow together. Bye now.